Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Gang's all here. Willie Donick is back from Stockholm, Sweden. We missed you. Between
it's the only Swedish I know. Skull.
You were there for a week.
And that's all you picked up?
Picked up one word.
One more word than I know in Swedish. But between your international travel and the sinus infection you were dealing with a couple of weeks ago, we've barely seen you. We're happy you're back.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back.
Derek Mason
yesterday
is here.
Was the longest day in the history of my life.
I can only imagine.
Just going back in time, it was just, you know, it started so early. Like local time, the broadcast started at 7:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. And we arrived last night at 1 a.m. So there was a lot that went on yesterday.
Man,
but
25.
I'm back.
Yes.
I'm ready to go. I took a little time this morning, adjusted. I'm feeling good. Feeling good.
Derek Mason is here, as always. David Janes is here, as always. I'm also here. So let's get right to it.
Do we have to?
Yes.
Gosh.
That's why people are listening. We get right to it.
Man. Well, let's
but
go.
Derek, last week,
yes,
we discussed the Titans' shrinking footprint in our state.
Mm-hmm.
The game against the Texans yesterday did not air in Memphis. It did not air in Knoxville. And it did not air in Chattanooga. And for pretty much the whole game, the citizens of those fine cities were spared by not having to watch eye-glazingly boring football.
Mm-hmm.
But Cam Ward,
I successfully listened to the game on the plane without falling asleep. So give me credit there.
Oh, wow.
Credit is earned.
I was doing my due diligence to follow the team. I couldn't get the telecast on the plane.
You must have been watching a good movie.
That is
dedication.
If you
couldn't get it in Knoxville, you probably couldn't get it in Stockholm, right? So
definitely.
There's a good chance.
But I was able to tune in via the satellite. So
now that is dedication.
That was dedicated, yes.
Willie listened, did not watch, listened to that game.
Oh, yes.
On a transatlantic flight. Excuse me. That is dedication. But despite that eye-glazingly boring football, Cam Ward did lead an impressive touchdown drive to tie the score late in the fourth quarter. So at least there was some excitement. And the Texans ultimately won 16-13 on a walk-off field goal. So the Titans remain in position to have the number one overall pick again, which is good. I can fire up tankathon.com at any moment. But the purpose of the second half of the season, because the wins don't matter, the purpose of the second half of the season is to see improvement from the Titans, and specifically from Cam Ward. He made some nice plays on that late drive, including a 39-yard pass to Chika Conquo down the left sideline that set up the tying touchdown to Van Jefferson. But overall, I still am feeling unsatisfied, not only by Cam Ward, but from the Titans as a whole. So, Derek, let's start here. How should we feel about Cam Ward in the Titans after the 16-13 loss to the Texans yesterday?
First, let's address, it's not a footprint. It's more like a fingerprint. And more so your pinky and not your thumb or something like that, something larger. So it's a fingerprint. And that's embarrassing in itself that you only have a fingerprint within your own state. So that is that. How should I tell the Titan fans how they should feel about Cam Ward and the Titans or Cam Ward specifically? Listen, it's what I am understanding and looking at now is that it's very hard to evaluate the guys that you know will be here. These young guys. And I say that because this team is not good. People think this is a dysfunctional franchise. Cleveland's dysfunctional. That's a dysfunctional franchise right there. And I can list about two or three more. I don't think the Titans, when it comes to this, I don't think that's what it is. This team is just bad. Like, and it's not even funny.
It's a little funny.
This team is bad. When they do just about everything right, they still end up losing. That is a bad team. And they were playing another bad offense.
With a backup quarterback.
So How should the fans feel about Cam Ward first? Listen, because, and we're going to talk about this in the days to come. But remember Carolina, how they wanted Bryce Young out of there? They wanted him. It was a mistake to draft him. That's all everybody was screaming. It was a mistake. And you know what? At that time, it was. Why? Because they didn't have the infrastructure. They didn't have the coach. They didn't have anything to surround this young man with. And then they expected him to go out there with already his limitations, meaning his height. They expected him, but this is the damn good player. He won Heisman. Led a team to a national. This is a damn good player. But they just didn't have the infrastructure around him. Why? Because they traded away a lot of pieces the year before. Eventually, when they started putting things around him and building a team, look, they're 6-5 right now. And he just had the best game of his young career. And he's looking good this season. So I say that to say this. I can't tell you how to feel about Cam Ward because I know some of you probably already made up your mind that he should be out of here. And some have made up your mind and said, no, give him a chance. I tell you one thing. The Titans hadn't made up their mind. They haven't. And it's going to be a good while before they do that. So with that being said, they need to surround the kid with talent. That's it. He needs to get better in some areas. But how can he get better when nothing's in front of him getting better? People understand that, but they don't want to actually put that to thought like, okay, I can see that happen. People think that, but they don't want that to come out of their mouth. Why? I don't know. But I can't develop in a bad situation. Tell me what player has developed in a bad situation. None. No player has developed. Talk about Manny, meaning the dad. They talked about how great he was.
Archie, you mean?
Archie. They talked about how great Archie was. He was on bad teams.
Terrible teams.
And he couldn't develop. He probably could have been a much better quarterback had he started off in New York at those days or San Fran or Pittsburgh. He probably would end up being a much better quarterback. But because that didn't happen, they didn't surround him. That quarterback that could have been. He had all the tools. It ain't like he was just messing. They just didn't do anything around him. I see so many quarterbacks nowadays. Caleb Williams, same thing. Last year, 2 years ago, whenever he got drafted, people wrote him off. He can't learn. That was a bad franchise. They were making bad moves. They hired the right coach, and look at what's happening to him, right? They lead the NFC North right now. And who would have thought that the Chicago Bears would lead the NFC North? But a couple of tweaks here, build that roster around him, and here we go.
It's a good point.
It's the same with Cam Ward. That's what I'm saying. Like, just wait. I'm not saying he's going to be the guy or not. But until they surround this young man with the right infrastructure, meaning the coaching staff, and then the players, we're not going to see whatever he is supposed to be. And if you think you're going to see it, you don't know football. And I'm going to say that right now. If you think you're going to see it without that bit happening, you don't know football.
He's definitely not a guy that is going to put a team on his back at whatever age he is right now. He's not that guy. I'm not sure what his ceiling is, but I'm looking for improvement. And yesterday, I would say that having gone back and watched things, it was a positive day in that he had some good moments. There were a couple of things that I thought were tangible things that we've talked about that need to get better. He got rid of the ball quicker. They're finding ways to have him release the ball quicker. He's learning that. I think we can try to say that. And he had a couple of runs. A couple of runs that were meaningful runs. That's a little bit of progress. Now, I want to see more of that. And he did it on a day where he had some injuries thrown at him from the very, very get-go, and his numbers weren't bad. And he had a good moment where he got him down there, tied the game. And ideally, you know, if you really want to get funky about it, it was probably better that they lost.
Yeah.
Maintain the high pick, right? But it's about as positive as you get without winning the game because he has a moment. He gets through the adversity. We see these little things. We know he's got nothing around him at all. And they still lose the game and maintain the best way to improve the roster, and that's through the draft.
To your point, Willie, the NFL noted that Cam Ward recorded an average time to throw of 2.6 seconds against the Texans, the fastest of his career. Through the first 10 weeks of the season, Ward averaged 2.97 seconds per throw, fifth longest in the NFL. But let's focus on that final drive, that 11-play, 95-yard touchdown drive. As Willie mentioned, Cam Ward had a 20-yard scramble during that drive. He made that 39-yard pass to Chigakonkwo to set up the Van Jefferson touchdown. But this is the question I also have about it. How much confidence should we derive from Ward's fourth quarter heroics? We asked the same question several weeks ago when the Arizona Cardinals puked the game away and Cam Ward was excellent in the fourth quarter. We saw a snapshot of what Cam Ward could be in that fourth quarter at Arizona. Once again, we saw a snapshot of what Cam Ward could be late in the fourth quarter yesterday. But how much confidence should we truly derive from those two glimpses of what Cam Ward can be when you consider the total of the season, which has not been great?
I think you should still, there should still be some, okay, he needs to prove more. He needs to do it more consistently. I think that needs to be there because there were two throws in a game that I thought that they were his throws to be made, and he didn't make them, and both of them were deep corner routes. One was a corner route, and the other was a wheel to Mason Kinsey. I don't know if Mason Kinsey was supposed to look outside because that's what Cam threw it, or was,
that was
he
a
supposed
weird one.
To look inside because he was wide open. I'm going to put that on Cam. And those two throws right there, I think he needs to get better at those deep corner routes. And listen, we've seen him make those throws here and there. Gunnar Helm corner out, a fade sort of. He had, I think, DK on one and Chig the last, you know, this last game. So he's hit them. But more and more of those shots are going to be there because they feel he can make that throw. Well, he got to start hitting those at a higher rate because right now he's leaving yards on the ground. And it's, I think there are things that with the proper footwork, they can get better. And again, he's throwing to new guys, the Mason Kinsey one. That's the first time he threw to Mason Kinsey.
And it's Mason Kinsey.
Yeah, exactly.
The quintessential practice squad guy who ends up playing a couple games, and he's great for what he is.
Exactly.
But
it's just
he needs more weapons. It's
exactly.
You know.
So, he needs to get better at things. But I think you look at him and you say, I just need to see more of those moments. But in order to see more of those moments, you got to get help because all of that was helped. All of that was able to be facilitated and played or whatnot. It's because everybody was doing their job. When you don't have everybody doing their job and they're not helping you, it's harder to make those type of plays or throws.
Let's go to Keegan on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Keegan, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I had a question for D-Mace. Mm-hmm. So usually I listen to the 9 to 12 show, Next Man Up with Jake Layman. Today I called in, and I made a little point about how, you know, NFL teams, they don't tank. Tanking is really not a thing in the NFL. And someone had called in after saying, you know, hey, that's totally wrong. We just saw us tank on Sunday. Tanking happens every year. I want to ask D-Mace, considering you were in the NFL, you were in that locker room, what's tanking like in the NFL? Does it fly? Does it not fly? How do guys react to that? And I kind of want to hear a perspective of someone that was in it, possibly a tanking team, not really tanking at one point. I just want to hear what it sounds like from you. So
thank you, Keegan.
That's all I got. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call,
Keegan. Thank you,
Keegan.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
You weren't really on many bad teams in your career.
I wasn't on many bad teams. And the only reason, honestly, if we were a bad team, it was because of injury. And it wasn't because that's how we were predicted to be. But if you're – the general question is, does tanking exist in the world of the NFL? From my experience, it doesn't. It's hard for me to believe that you can convince 53 guys or even 10 guys to tank, you know, and go out there and purposely lose a game. And I get it, all the gambling stuff that's going on. But to say, well, we're going to throw this game so we can get the number one pick. Guys just don't operate. Guys, it's like, man, I got to earn my paycheck, man. I don't know if I'm going to be here next year. And then that guy they drafted, they might be drafting him, you know, to replace me. So it's always a, I need to do what I need to do to make sure I secure my job first and foremost. That means doing the right thing, being where you're supposed to be and being productive out there on the football field. But tanking, players don't even, we don't even think about it. That's more so of a, like, outside the building thing. Because inside, that stuff, it honestly, the locker rooms that I've been in, it has never even been a thought to say, yeah, man, we can get number one pick. No, it's just, at least from my experience, it doesn't happen.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction to the Titans' loss to the Texans yesterday. Quickly, some breaking news in college football. Via Pete Thamel of ESPN, Virginia Tech and James Franklin are finalizing an agreement for him to become the school's next head coach.
I will tell you, I think that's a good match. I think James Franklin will do well there, and for two reasons. Number one, he's a guy that, a little bit like, let's see, who would be the guy in other sports? There's some, maybe a Peter Laviolette type of guy in the NHL. He's going to come in, and he's going to have energy for a program that has the fan base, but they're flat right now. They've not had success in a while. He is going to get that group going. The other thing is he recruits very well in that area. That is a hotbed of recruiting. I think that's a good fit for James Franklin.
So James Franklin in agreement to become the next head coach of the Virginia Tech Hokies. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Jeffrey Simmons sounded off after the game yesterday. We will play that for you. There's also a question that I want to ask Derek about how Jeffrey Simmons' words should fly in the locker room. We will get to that next. 615-737-1025. Mondays were made for Macero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action. From queso to kickoffs, this is how Macero does game night. Macero Football Mondays in 12th South. Don't miss a snap.
Can't have that many false starts. We need to be better. I mean, we can't keep sitting up here saying the same thing, trying to sugarcoat it for the media, for no anybody. And I said it in the locker room. I said it on the field. I'm tired of sugarcoating. I mean, we need to be better. At the end of the day, we need to protect Cam better. Simple.
How do you guys feel as a defense when knowing if you give up two touchdowns or, you know, whatever, that it's going to be hard to win?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's about complementing football. We have to play better team football. We sometimes the offense can be playing good. Sometimes the defense. But how can we play good as a team three phases? We not playing good team football right now, and it's showing. And Mike said it at practice Friday. We had freaking four false starts Friday. We playing at home. We shouldn't have that many false starts. Don't care. Like, I'm tired of saving feelings. I'm tired of losing. That's what I'm tired of doing.
That was Jeffrey Simmons after the game yesterday. Titans lose 16-13 to the Houston Texans. As he said in that clip, the Titans had four false starts in Friday's practice. Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com tweeted this a few hours ago. Quote, talk to multiple people about this. My sense is Simmons exaggerated to make a point. I believe practice squad offensive linemen playing role of Texans jumped once and a Tennessee wide receiver jumped once in Friday practice. But false starts were an issue yesterday. There were five of them, three of which were by J.C. Latham. And we will talk about J.C. Latham later in the program. But here's the question I have for Derek. Consider this, ask D-Mace. I have a question for you, Derek. How do you feel about a defensive player calling out the offense? I know that Jeffrey Simmons is a leader of the team, but we've talked about this before, about how offense takes care of offense, defense takes care of defense. So how do you feel about Jeffrey Simmons calling out the offense after the game yesterday?
This is a tricky one because this is all about maturing as a leader. again, I haven't been in Jeffrey Simmons' situation, meaning I haven't been on a bad team like that. And our teams, the teams that I played on, we always had those veterans in the locker room. So, you know, even if we lose, I mean, we started off 1-4 at one time, you know, but we were able to stay together because we understood this is a veteran locker room. We got a lot of leaders, man. Let's just follow those guys. And we regrouped and we ended up making the playoffs. So this is all a process for Jeffrey Simmons. Because this is a slippery slope now. Because that's like, you know, one spouse shouldn't be always, you know, complaining about airing out the dirty laundry in front of everybody. You know, you and your wife, y'all may have a little small argument, then y'all go in front of everybody and you start telling her what she's not doing and all this, and you need to do this better. And that never ends up right. It never ends up in a good place. I know where his heart is. I know what he's doing. I know what he's trying to say. I understand that part. And again, maybe I don't understand because I haven't been in that situation. But I'm just talking from whatever situation I was in leadership that we had. It was like, no, like in private, you need to do your job better, this and that. But we never aired out our dirty laundry in public. We just didn't do that. You know, you have things said here and there, but I'm not blaming, like, listen, I'm not blaming Samari and Blaine and Bullock and those guys. I'm not blaming them if we lost, even if they played bad. The defense played, I'm not blaming, no. They could play bad 2 weeks in a row. They know what they need. They are holding each other accountable on that side of the ball. They're doing that. Steve never said anything about those guys. Eddie never said anything about those guys in public. And vice versa. When we had that trouble, and believe me, we had trouble scoring. Y'all witnessed it. We had trouble scoring those years. We were going 8-8. Even because we had a run or we wasn't flashy. But Blaine and them ain't get on the airwaves and screaming how bad we are. Or they need to do this. And no, we may have talked about it in the locker room. So in the locker room, yeah, let's challenge each other. We're going to challenge each other. But I think people are getting too comfortable with airing out their laundry in the media. And then when it get used back on them, they get mad at the media for using it back on them. And I'm not saying that they're going to do this with Jeffrey. And again, this is a tricky one because he's the biggest voice in that locker room. The biggest voice. He may be the biggest voice in that building, honestly. Judging by them saying they're not going to trade him in this, he's the biggest voice in that building outside of the owner. You see what I'm saying? So it's still a process for him. But if you're asking me, like, no, I don't like that you called out JC. Basically, you called out JC. You called out JC. And listen, they may have that relationship, and they may be fine. But if you can dish it, you got to be able to take it now. You got to be able to say, if somebody say, you need to be getting some more sacks or you need to be doing this, it's about understanding one another. When those curtains close, that's why coaches, they only give out so much. They only give up because Vrabel hated that. He hated talking to y'all. And he hated giving y'all information, us, anybody. But the players are so freely. They just give it to everybody. Just here, take it. Here, you want to know what's here? This is what we said. And I know the coach probably like, damn. Ah, gosh. But again, it's all a process. I'm not getting on Jeff or anything like that. I want people to understand and hear me. I guess more so my father's side is coming out, my dad's side. But it's just a learning process for him. I wish he would have did that. He wouldn't even air that out. I wish he would have just said, hey, all of us, and he said it, but he should have kept it like all of us.
And I think you can keep the passion,
yes,
of getting your point across. I'm tired of losing. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
But stay stay away from some of the specifics you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's a losing team. When you start doing that.
Yes, and he's playing well. That's the good. Like, he comes back in there, and he did a good job playing in that game.
Some reaction on our text line, 615-737-1025. Ryan says, Simmons sounds stupid for taking a dig at the offense this time. They did their job scoring a touchdown to tie with under 2 minutes to go. His defense dropped the ball, not keeping them in field goal range. Our friend Gover says, by calling out the offense, Jeffrey Simmons is a leader, but if he calls out somebody next week, then it becomes an optics problem for him. He gets one and he took a shot. Jeremy in Clarksville says, maybe my view is skewed. I've served a couple decades in the military. Even if you know your team slash unit is bad at something, you never say it in front of outsiders. You take care of your business as a team.
I think that's a good point. And if I think that's the best way to do
it.
And if he did say exactly what he said, I think you also turn it back and you mention, and we've got to get a stop on the last drive. Mm-hmm. We had him third and 16. We've got to get a stop right there. Like, if he makes that, he puts it on himself too. Like, I didn't get to, like, you take some responsibility while you, you know, for lack of a better term, barf all this stuff out, your frustration, right? He's just, because there's nothing wrong with the passion. It's just the channeling of it. And look, he's going to be around. They made their choice. Mm-hmm. They said, we want to build around Jeffrey Simmons. So let's keep working on this. It's not too late to keep working on your leadership skills.
And listen, this is something that, you know, he's refining his skills of being a leader because, frankly, he is the only leader. He is the only guy that has been with this organization, and last time they were really good. I'm trying to figure out, has it been anybody else? Honestly, I don't know. Maybe Hooker, Amani Hooker. He was the only other player, but I'm not sure if there were. The last time this team was really good, I don't think these guys were on that team. I could be wrong, but Jeff was. He was on the tail end of that. And he understands and knows what it looks like and knows what it takes. So I'm not sitting here getting on him. What I said, it's all, he's still refining his leadership skills, and he's frustrated and he wants to win. I'm sure everybody in that building knows Jeffrey Simmons wants to win badly. But my thing is to him would be, yes, we know you want to win, but don't sacrifice your brothers in the process. That never works out well for you.
One texter says, didn't Jeff have a pretty dumb penalty on a field goal try that extended the drive? Can't remember if it resulted in a field goal or touchdown. That was at the beginning of the
game. It really wasn't a penalty. That was a bad call.
It really didn't cost them because they stopped them later in the drive.
Right. Was that the Cody
Barton? No, they got a field goal on that one.
Wasn't that the Cody Barton sack?
I thought they got stopped on the fourth down.
Was it on the fourth down?
Wasn't that early in the game?
It was early in the game.
So it may have.
So they
been
didn't
the
score.
Fourth,
they got down to the two and went for it on fourth and goal. The two. Is that right?
I'll look it up. But then Barton sacked Mills.
Yes, you're right.
How the play ended. All of these things just run together when you're watching the Tennessee Titans. Brian says, just another thought on this: with the team always having their heads buried in the sand, and so naive reality Okay. Could he be the only one speaking the truth and knew he needed to do it through the media to get his point across instead of just in the locker room?
That doesn't fly in this world. It doesn't. You don't do something like that in the media just so you can get your, you know, teammates' attention. That is total opposite of the way this world works inside of an NFL locker room. You're right next to the guy. You can say exactly what you need to say. His locker is no more than 20 feet away from him, at most 20 feet away from you. So you can walk to him and let him know. So, I'm not looking at this as some cryptic way for him to try to get to his players. He's not a coach.
Also, here's a good point that I think. This is, once again, you didn't play on a lot of bad teams. Mm-hmm. But I think we see this, like I'll think about Vanderbilt football, right, over some lean years. There are the same guys that have to answer the same questions when you're losing every week.
Yes.
That's not easy. I mean, Adam, you've probably seen hockey teams that were struggling, and you got to go in there, okay, this is your seventh loss in nine games. Like, the Predators are going through it right now. You see Ryan O'Reilly right now, and he almost wanted a do-over. That last time where he just poured his heart out, took everything on himself, and his teammates know that it wasn't him. Mm-hmm. He didn't call any of his teammates out, but he was like, basically, I stink. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a bad player. This is awful. But I think when you're struggling and the media is coming to you every time, that's a challenge, right? And so Jeffrey Simmons, I'm sure he's getting tired of answering, hey, yeah. How come you guys, what's the deal? Why, how come you guys can't win it? You guys are 1-9. He's answering the same questions every week. That's tough.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction on the Titans' loss to the Texans and what Jeffrey Simmons had to say after the game. Fair or foul from Jeffrey Simmons? Your thoughts. 615-737-1025. We will bring Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation Titans reporter, into this conversation. He will join us next. Also, be listening throughout the show because we not only have one giveaway, we have two giveaways during today's program. You can win a pair of tickets to see Belmont women's basketball take on Lipscomb at the Curb Event Center this Wednesday. You can also win, and this is a pretty good prize if I do say so myself, a 4-pack of tickets to see All Elite Wrestling, Dynamite, and Collision at the Pinnacle next Wednesday, November 26th. I'm sure as hell going to that. And you can too if you're listening and you win those tickets. So Belmont basketball tickets, AEW tickets to give away during the show. I will give you the cue to call as the show progresses. But Teron Davenport is coming up next, 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Before we bring in our friend Teron Davenport, some breaking NFL news from Adam Schefter. The NFL has suspended Ja'Marr Chase for spitting at Jalen Ramsey. Chase denied spitting at Ramsey, Schefter writes, but the league determined the video evidence was sufficient to warrant a suspension. So a one-game suspension for Ja'Marr Chase for spitting at Jalen Ramsey.
I don't understand these kids nowadays. I really don't. Spitting, that is so degrading when you spit on somebody or spit at somebody. Should have been longer than one game, honestly.
But how does he think?
I just don't get it.
Like, deep down, he's got to know.
Yeah. Jalen Ramsey, I'd have punched him in his face. I'd have went after him after that. I'd have went at him. Right.
Did you think it wasn't on video? Like,
yeah, it's just like.
Or, you know, there's cameras everywhere.
Like, dude, why do you district? Like, that's a total lack of respect for the game. These kids talk about how much they love the game, and I'm not saying they you know, all these kids don't. And I don't want to, you know, single out one guy and make it seem like this is everybody's problem. But we've seen this too many times where someone is spitting on another person. It's like, dude, it ain't even that serious, really. And you wouldn't spit on me if we was out in the streets. You just wouldn't do that. But this is a total lack of respect for the game, let alone for your opponent. But it's a total lack of respect for the game, period.
Let's welcome in Teron Davenport, who is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. Teron, in the previous segment, we played part of Jeffrey Simmons's scrum after the game yesterday. Two-part question for you. One, for as long as you've covered the Tennessee Titans, is that the maddest you've seen Jeffrey Simmons after a game? And two, how did the offensive players you spoke to today respond to what Jeffrey Simmons had to say yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably as upset as I've seen him, rightfully so. You know, he came back and he was hoping to, you know, get a win. It was an opportunity where they should have won that game as it kind of played out down the stretch. So, yeah, he was upset. That's the worst. The offense, I mean, we only talked to Lloyd Cushenberry. That was the only one. We don't get open locker room on Mondays, but he was the offensive player. Jahad Ward was the defensive player, and Cushenberry and even just in the locker room yesterday talking to them, Cam Ward, you know, some of the other guys, like, they understood the frustration and they know they have to play better, and it's not they're not contributing to their part of the formula, and it's making it difficult.
Teron, Cam Ward led a 95-yard touchdown drive in the fourth quarter to set up an exciting finish in what was an otherwise, I call it, boring game. You may see it otherwise. But my question for you is, how much confidence should Titans fans derive from Ward's performance on that fourth quarter drive? It reminds me a little bit of how we talked about Cam Ward's performance in the fourth quarter several weeks ago at Arizona. So how much confidence, based on what you saw from Ward, what he was able to do leading the team all the way down the field, how much confidence should Titans fans derive from that particular part of the game?
Well, I don't know that there's a whole lot of confidence that they should derive from it. I think it's just you got to understand that it's all a process, and these people that are so quick to rush to judgment about this, that, and the third, you got to let the man get acclimated to the league. And I think what you saw was a guy that was able to get rid of the ball quicker. Now, as Mike McCoy said when I asked him about that today, a lot of that had to do with those guys coming off the edge, and it was, you know, there was some game plan to get the ball out. But I think he showed you that he can do it. I think that's the thing that you got to pull from it. He showed you that he has the moxie, and, you know, these are the things that he did at Miami as far as, you know, coming up clutch and really good in the clutch and things like that. And, you know, that's what he did on that drive. And I think the thing that you got to take away from that also is the fact that they had to change personnel up, right? They had to go to more 12 personnel because of how, you know, much they were down on the receivers. And, you know, when Iamanner had his hamstring, he was limited, and DK with the chest contusion, and obviously Ridley with the fibula broken.
Now, TD, you said you spoke with Lloyd Cushenberry for a minute. How does he feel about the offensive line just in general? Because yesterday they were playing pretty good up until a point, and I know Houston ended up with three sacks, but at one point, I think even into the third quarter, it was the Titans didn't give up any sacks, and that's what a lot of people were talking about. Hey, these two rush ins, the Titans' bad offensive line, this is going to be a sack fest. It didn't ultimately end up that way, but how did JC feel about his play in the offensive line's play?
Yeah.
I mean, Cushenberry, I'm sorry.
Right. No, I know what you meant, but I'm glad you mentioned him because I was going to touch on that too. I think when you look at it, they understood that there were too many penalties and the false starts, five of them. But outside of that, and that's not to discount it because it's still a part of the program, you know, that they put out there. But, you know, I think for the most part, as far as the pressures and stuff like that, I think, you know, they did a solid job. And Cushenberry will tell you the same thing. And I think, you know, you mentioned J.C. Latham, and obviously those false starts that he had were terrible. And, you know, they had their own story to each of them, et cetera. But I think if you actually look at his play itself, he didn't play bad. He actually played pretty well, you know, against those guys. Neither of them, you know, got sacks on him, and, you know, he limited the pressure. So I think he did a solid job for the most part.
Now, how much is – because, listen, the talk was Calvin Ridley's back. Will he play? End up playing briefly, one play. But you saw very early on that he was probably going to be a fixture in that offense. Great throw back Cam, good catch. Ultimately, he gets injured. This kid can't buy a break. No pun intended. But do you think that was something that they were looking to do? Get Calvin Ridley involved very early? Because I think if he's in the game, even the things that I've said about him being inconsistent, I think you have another pass catcher on the field that may cause Houston to play defense a little bit different.
Yeah, and that's what Cam Ward said in regards to Ridley. Like, he's like, it's Calvin Ridley. You got to respect him. And he's a guy that defenses are going to have to adjust to. And I think 100% that was the case. And it's just crazy how this team, even when they do something right, it has bad consequences, right? Because how many times has it been said, hey, don't run the ball on the first play of the game offensively, right? They do it all the time. And so now they get away from it, and now one of your best offensive weapons ends up hurt. So it's just an example of just how this team is just – they can't win for anything. It's a catch-22 with almost everything with them.
Deron Davenport is with us. So, Deron, let's try to look at some of the things that they're trying to inch forward. Let's start with Cam Ward. A couple of key runs at key times. That's a step in the right direction to be. Have you seen that building some? Are you confident we're going to see a little bit more of that as we go forward?
Yes, because that's one of the things that he thought about over the break. You know, in addition to making the easy play, the easy throw. But, I mean, look, that's one of the easy plays. They're a man defense back to the quarterback, and
you know, you got a rush lane. And he said that because of the way that they rushed the passer, that there were going to be lanes for him to escape and make a run and scramble. So that's what you saw. But I think in addition to that, you also have to look at what Mike McCoy said when we talked to him last Monday. And he mentioned how he watched other quarterbacks and saw how decisive they were as far as throwing the football, but more importantly, running. And I think that's something that was kind of preached to Cam, to be more decisive. I think it was like 2.6 seconds per throw, which is down from the 2.9 that he was at. So all of that is going into the account of being more decisiveness, knowing when to run the football, and then also when to go ahead and throw it, get it out your hands quickly.
That leads me into, I think, a big question for Mike Borgonzi, as he's watching Cam Ward make these little baby steps and hopefully figure out what does he do really well, where is he going to continue to get better, and in the big picture, what do I want the offense to look like with the new coaching staff, whoever that ends up being? What do you think goes through his mind? What do you think he's learned about Cam Ward, Borgonzi, in the weeks since they've made the change with Callahan?
Yeah, I think he's learned that Cam is pretty much unflappable, and you could put him in pretty much any situation and he's not going to fold. Now, will he come through and make a tremendous play? That's to be determined, but I think yesterday showed you that he's capable of it. So really it just comes down to knowing that you got a guy that you could put in the fire and he's going to be okay. And that's the main thing. Then you also see, like, hey, got to put some weapons around him, right? And I think, you know, you look at what Chig Okonkwo, that was a tremendous catch by Okonkwo, you know, on that corner route that he made. And it was a tremendous throw.
They need some more guys to make plays like that, without a doubt. That's hopefully going to be in the cards. Do you have a sense of anything materializing on the coaching search? Do you think there's any chance that they will keep any portion of the staff offensively or defensively when they make the change, or when they decide that it's not an interim anymore?
Yeah, I don't even think they have any sense of that, honestly, because once you hire the person, once you hire the coach, you know, he's going to have his guys, and sometimes you have spillover, sometimes you don't. But it really depends on the guy who's coming in. I mean, it's just, you know, like Bill Parcells used to say, if you're going to make me cook, at least let me go get the groceries.
Right.
And that's obviously for the players when he was talking about that, but I think it applies even more to the coaches because those are the ones that you have in place, institute, and all of your core principles.
Two more quick ones. Gunnar Helm just had a good question on our YouTube chat about him. How do they get him to a next level? Because the more you watch him, like, it's like when they throw it his way, good things seem to happen. What's next for him?
Yeah, I mean, he's been targeted 31 times, caught 26 of them, right? So Mike McCoy said he wants completions. Well, you know, scheme up more ways to get him the football. And
yes.
I think really it just comes down to giving him the targets. Now, I'm still not sure how many plays that they're calling where he's one of the top options and Cam is getting away from it sometimes. But, I mean, it's really just the bottom line is, you don't want to force it to him, but you got to take advantage of this man's ability. And I think, you know, there's different things that you could do to get him the ball, and they have to do that more because he's clearly a playmaker.
Last one, your perspective on Jeffrey Simmons. I had a good talk with D-Mace about this earlier in the show. But one thing, and you've watched it because you cover this locker room every day, and they've gone through the struggles, without a doubt. So the same guys get asked the same questions every week. After these losses, it can't be an easy thing to do. But how do you think they're handling that part of it, specifically Simmons, who's always going to be the go-to guy?
Yeah, I think he's done a great job. And actually, you've seen a lot of growth in Jeffrey Simmons. And I'm proud of the way that he's stood up and handled a lot of this because he is clearly tired of the losing. And he's not going to be soft with it or sugarcoat it anymore. I like the fact that he's like, hey, man, like we just have to have direct conversation. And the thing that was the best to me about all that, because when I asked him about that direct conversation and, hey, how are you going to make sure that it's not personal? And one of the things that he said was, if they're taking it personal, I don't know what to tell them because I'm challenging them, right? It's not anything like a dig at their, you know, manhood or anything like that. He's just challenging them to elevate their play, and I think that's what you want your leaders to do.
Teron Davenport has been our guest on D-Mace, Ving, and Adonik. He joins us every Monday at 3:40, and he is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy TD. Great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, for sure. Appreciate it.
615-737-1025. We've got a lot of reaction, so we will get to all of it coming up next. 615-737-1025 if you want in on it. But I did tell you that we have a couple of giveaways today, so here's the first. If you want a pair of tickets to see Belmont women's basketball take on Lipscomb at the Curb Event Center this Wednesday, be caller number 2 at 615-737-1025. Once again, a pair of tickets to see Belmont women's basketball take on Lipscomb at the Curb Event Center this Wednesday. Tip-off is at 5 p.m. Be caller number 2, 615-737-1025. Let me tell all of you Predators fans out there that now that the team is back from Sweden, Smashville Live returns Wednesday night at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 o'clock. See your Predators star players up close and personal and get autographs and pictures, player guests, TBD. But that's this Wednesday night at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue and only on 102.5 The Game.